This morning's layoff news may be less than surprising, but that doesn't make it any less painful.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Scott Jagow. The last time claims for unemployment benefits were higher than now was post-Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. This morning, the Labor Department reports the number of newly laid off workers surged past the 400,000 mark last week to 406,000. That's an increase of 34,000. More unsettling numbers from Ford. The number two automaker lost $8.6 billion in the second quarter of the year, mainly writing down the value of all those gas-guzzling trucks and SUVs that now sit unsold. Company executives are reassuring financial analysts they're confident they have the cash needed to ride out this rough road. Never mind energy prices or the economy, Southwest Airlines says it was still flying high through its 69th straight profitable quarter. It looks like Southwest will be the only big U.S. carrier to have made money in the first half of the year. And the twist here is fuel costs are actually a big reason for its success, as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch explains.
More than any other airline, Southwest locked in the price it pays for jet fuel months ahead of time. This strategy of hedging has been an insurance policy against the run-up in crude oil prices. In 10 years, Southwest has saved $3.5 billion due to these fuel hedges. That's equal to about 83% of the company's profits over the same period.
They were lucky. Nobody can call the future that well, that consistently, and be correct. Hedging is a very dangerous business.
That's airline consultant Daryl Jenkins.
Going into next year and the year after that, the hedging is going to become even more risky. Because right now, none of us have any idea where the price of jet fuel is going to be.
Southwest hasn't made a significant hedging bet in 15 months. But the airline says its current hedging contracts give it time to find other sources of revenue in this new world of expensive fuel. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
By the way, there's good news on oil prices this morning. They're now the lowest they've been in almost 2 months, down to $123 a barrel. Lately, even a little good news like that might have been enough to get the stock market going again, but the high anxiety seems to be outweighing the recent high hoping on Wall Street. The Dow is down 46 points, 0.4%. The NASDAQ and the S&P both down around 0.1%. European markets also down. Today's bleak profit picture from Ford means bad news for Detroit. Motown has been hit with a double whammy of home foreclosures and a struggling auto industry. So city leaders are looking for investments from some unexpected places. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
100,000. That's how many auto jobs Wayne County has lost in the past decade. It's the home of Detroit. Here's local man Jimmy speaking at a downtown music festival.
You know, we take our dogs for a walk and we'll notice one or two new houses either up for sale or actually have signs in the windows that they have been foreclosed like every week, honestly.
It's hard to see this depressed economy as a buying opportunity, but some Chinese companies are doing just that. The Beijing-based Tempo Group ships chassis parts to North America. It just bought a Detroit warehouse to store them all in and an adjacent office park. On top of that, executive Jeff Zhao is hiring.
American automotive makers, they are reducing their workforce. So this is a good historical opportunity for people to set up shop here and to hire local talents.
Wayne County lured Zhao's company with tax breaks. County executive Robert Ficano says back in the 80s, Detroit didn't always play that game, and it got burned.
When Toyota first looked at, well, we're going to go in the United States, they were sort of shunned and it wasn't a lot of effort to recruit. And now today, Toyota has, I believe, 9 or 10 manufacturing plants. None of them are in the state of Michigan. We don't want to make that mistake with the Chinese investment.
Every year, Ficano leads trade missions to China. And Michigan regularly hosts Chinese companies looking to acquire local firms. It's a form of global economy speed dating.
We're competing against Dubai, Beijing, and others. Capital's more mobile than it's ever been in the history of the world.
Still, not everyone in Michigan is a fan of Chinese investment. The notion of Buy America still holds currency here, and China's corporate reputation for quality isn't exactly great. Again, Chinese executive Jeff Zhao.
The bar is a little bit higher because people don't know you, and you have to exceed their expectations. It's not just in automotive industry, it's in everything. Every Chinese know that.
In the end, he expects Michigan locals to accept his company and his investment, since brand China in this case means American jobs. In Detroit, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, July 24th at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon. The World Trade Organization is resuming talks in Geneva today. Negotiators are trying to reach a global trade deal by the weekend. Observers say that's probably not going to happen, and that could hurt the world economy. Over to our Stephen Beard in London with more.
A three-way deal is under discussion. Rich countries cut their farm subsidies, poor countries open up their markets to more industrial goods, and a big shake-up in the service sector, with less restriction on the movement of skilled workers around the globe. Agreement seems as elusive as ever, and a deadline is looming. If a deal isn't done before the August holiday begins, agreement will be further delayed by the US election in the fall. The whole round of talks could easily fail. Peter Sutherland, former head of the WTO, told the BBC that could have very damaging consequences.
It will increase, I think, the likelihood of more protectionism, which we've already seen evidence of, both in the European case and also in the United States in the lead-up to the presidential election. We can't allow that to happen.
The talks are due to end on Saturday but could drag on into next week. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
After 5 years of war in Iraq and nearly seven in Afghanistan, the Department of Veterans Affairs has seen demand for its services soar, but many veterans don't know what's available to them. So this week, the department rolls out its first ad campaign in 30 years. Jessica Lusenhop reports.
TV spots like this one featuring actor Gary Sinise will tell veterans about programs and benefits.
VA cares about you. VA.
Paul Rieckhoff is executive director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He says until recently, the VA was banned from advertising. All it could do was put posters and pamphlets in hospitals and outreach centers.
That's great if you get into the VA center. But most veterans who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan haven't been to the VA yet.
He says many vets don't even know what they can get from the government. Lizette Mondello is an official at the VA. She wants veterans to know what they're entitled to.
We're talking about various services that the VA might have to offer and to increase awareness about health care, about home loans, about education loans, about burial benefits.
Mondello says she doesn't know how much the ad campaign will cost. She says the VA is in the early stages of finding an agency to help. I'm Jessica Lusenhop for Marketplace.
Check out some of the adjectives the Federal Reserve is using now to describe economic conditions in some parts of the country. Its latest regional roundup paints things as either morose or just plain grim, with the country facing increasing inflationary pressures amid slowing economic growth. Even so, our own economics editor Chris Farrell still isn't convinced we need to worry so much. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So we have been hearing this, it seems like forever now. Slow economic growth, maybe even a recession, and rising prices. Sounds like stagflation to me, but do you think that this is all overblown?
Oh, I think the fear of stagflation is way overblown. The slow economy, I'm not going to argue about that with you. And in fact, I'm in the camp that says we're in a recession. But when it comes to inflation, there's no big worry.
Okay, now wait a minute. We had Coke announcing price increases come Labor Day. Sarah Lee
says... And I
know
that upset you. Upset you a lot.
Sarah Lee says it's going to be raising prices on some meat items by 20%. Kraft, Kellogg's, ConAgra, Tyson's, they're all pushing through price increases. How can you say no inflation?
Well, all the examples that you've given have to do with food. But you take out food and energy, and you still come down to inflation's running about a 2.4% annual rate.
Life is a little difficult to live when you take out food and energy.
But it is still remarkable, Bob. Service sector inflation is slowing. It's a service sector economy. And what I say is happening is that budgets are being nicked by higher prices for energy and food, and so they're spending less, and business can't raise prices.
Okay. The more important question, it seems to me, though, is that we know historically that these things can snowball really fast. And
yeah,
if we've got these price increases being announced and the mentality is out there, what happens down the road?
There is a concern about inflation psychology. If people really start to believe that prices are going to go up, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's why the Fed keeps talking about it. But again, I still come back to when we had inflation in the 1970s, we had a wage price spiral. Where are the unions demanding a 5, 6, 10% wage increase? You don't hear them. It's a slowing economy. It's global competition. And it is shrinking household budgets are all conspiring to keep inflationary pressures down.
Okay, Chris, so I guess as long as we got nothing to spend, we got nothing to worry about.
Well, we may have a lot to worry about, but we don't have to worry about a price spiral.
Chris Farrell, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. You can hear replays of any of our programs at marketplace.org. And thanks very much for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.